What's up, everybody? It's the latest Nerd Extravaganza podcasting. I am Tom, your host this evening, joined as always with my indubitably awesome co-hosts, Rick, Grant, and Keith. What's up?
Regular stuff and some irregular stuff.
Irregular, like my bowel.
Sounds like someone needs some Doxanan.
It's got Moxie.
So guys, in the regular course of events since our last show, we've had a little bit of a break since then. What has been going on? How about you, Rick? What's been going on in your nerdy life since last time we spoke?
I have been spending all my time in front of the computer making 3D parts in Google SketchUp and then hypnotizingly bound watching them print out on my MakerBot 3D printer. So much so that I even missed a trip to MegaCon where MakerBot had a booth set up and I didn't even know it.
Oh, man. Bummer.
And other than that, I've been testing said products or said projects on the robot and tweaking and just, you know, basically Jawa-ing out, as I like to call it.
Ooh, I like that. I'm going to use that. That's a new verb.
Jawa-ing?
It's hard to say because it comes out, I'm jawing out.
Well, it sounds better than tweaking the fuzz bot.
But that is actually what I'm doing. I love that.
Are you supposed to wait till after the podcast to start doing that?
That'll be, you know what? I should start blogging it, and all the posts will be called Tweaking the Fuzzbot.
Very nice.
Thank you, Grant.
Anything else, Rick? Not to dwell too much on it, but any 3D re-releases of movies you might have seen?
Oh, it's been a 3D extravaganza, hasn't it? I will say that I went to the movie theater and adorned my real 3D glasses. And even with the presence of Jar Jar Binks, I was having an awesome time, dude. I loved it. I loved it.
You're on the take or something.
I'm not on the take, I swear. I had a freaking blast seeing this movie in the theater without any expectations. I was giddy like a schoolgirl with a big old shit-eating grin during the whole thing. I had fun, man. Fun. Real, honest to God, fun.
Hot damn, because you never have fun at the movies.
I wasn't annoyed. I had my seats. I ordered them online and reserved them. I had my seats. I had a big old bag of candy and free popcorn from the I signed up on the club and got, you know, coupons, so I get free popcorn. It was awesome, man. The only thing I was missing was a Dr. Pepper, but I had a cherry Pepsi, so I was all right. And it was good, man. It was good. I will say that there were some overall nothing, you know, crazy spectacular as far as 3D goes, but there were a couple of scenes that really make me look forward to the upcoming episodes because the space scenes are gonna be sick.
But so the pod racer scene was good.
Good. I mean, okay. Nothing, you know, crazy. If you saw in one of our last episodes when we were talking about the, you know, show previous to going to see the movies, I show noted a couple links, and one of them was a little documentary about George Lucas talking about how he doesn't like 3D gimmickry. So I was very happy with the outcome of the level of 3D-ness that was there. It was good.
And the Duel of the Fates?
I gotta say, man, that for all these years being the high point of that movie wasn't as intense as it is or was the first time I saw it. It was actually kind of a little bit of a lull in the movie.
Oh. Kind of too quick, right?
Yeah, it seemed really short and not nearly as badass as I remembered.
Yeah, it was kind of like this, just like a scuffle of the fates, really. Well, that was uneventful.
Huh. Scuffle of the passing fates.
Well, good. It sounds like you've had a fun-filled interval since our last discussion, Rick. I will now pass the virtual mic over to Keith. You'll go next. What have you been up to?
Well, I haven't been watching no crappy Star Wars movie, I can tell you that much.
I didn't.
Thank God.
No, I spent, I discovered CG movies, I guess. I was looking for a Blu-ray to watch on my PlayStation with my new television, and I saw the Final Fantasy VII Advent Children movie.
I knew that's what it was going to be.
So I was like, well, let me check this out and see if it's any good. And let me tell you, it's pretty cool, man. Mm. And now I've got this bug where I want to find every like photorealistic CG movie to watch on my television.
You just did.
Have you seen Final Fantasy, what was it, The Spirits Within?
I have not seen The Spirits Within.
Oof.
So I'm going to have to pick that
one. That's
actually
kind of fun to watch. It's kind of fun to watch now for some reason. Some other good ones was Nine. Nine was kind of photorealistic, but it just starred a bunch of, like, rag dolls.
That was a good one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that movie looked like it was going to be good. I mean, I saw Beowulf in the theater, which... Some scenes looked really good, and some scenes looked really bad. But I like this whole complete fake thing in the Final Fantasy. There was one part, and I don't know any of the characters or none of that stuff, but they created the big monster, and there were scenes where I swear to God it looked like it was completely real, not even CG at all. I was amazed at how good it looked. And so, yeah, now I'm on the hunt for more of that good stuff.
Netflix, dude, has all kinds of crap like that, and most of them are in HD.
Yeah. Another thing I found on my television, I forget what I signed up for, but I put in my Google ID, and it automatically brought up all of my Picasso web albums. And looking at my pictures on my TV is awesome because I store them in high definition, or not high definition, but high resolution. So they just looked amazing on the television, and I enjoyed doing that. Discovering more fun things about my TV.
Cool, man. That's pretty geeky, Keith. I you are just enjoying household technology to the degree that you do. Well, it shows off your geeky bona fides.
Well, I kind of have to since I got old people cable.
OPG. OPC. Sorry. Keith's down with OPC.
OPGC. Old people, group cable.
It's affordable. We're on a fixed income. What?
You're too good for TNT?
I don't know how people could watch this crap.
That makes two of us. Four of us, I guess. let's shuffle on over to Grant, then. What have you been up to, sir?
Well, as you know, the break has also comprised Valentine's Day, and in keeping up with that, I've been seeing Red for the past week or so. Most notably,
that time
saying
of the month, eh?
Well, it's that time of the year, I suppose. I have to say goodbye to a good friend. My Xbox 360 gave me the old Red Rings this weekend.
Oh, no.
I know a guy who's got one for sale.
Yeah. You want to sell me your crappy old Xbox. I might be willing to buy it.
Crappy old? It's new. It's only like 3 months old.
That way, oh, you're buying that. You want to save up for the R2-D2 one when it comes out?
Yep.
Okay. I might. We'll talk about that one later. But yeah, it died. So I've been playing PlayStation 3. A lot of this really old, or year and a half old game called Enslaved, Journey to the West. A lot of good motion capture in that game from, what's his name, Andy Serkis? The Gollum dude?
Yep.
Yeah.
He was also the guy...
The monkey, right?
Yeah, the monkey from that award-winning piece of shit Planet of the Apes.
You know you're going to watch it again and love it.
I thought you liked it when you first saw it. Am I making this up?
No. If I was blind in one eye and couldn't see out of the other, I still wouldn't have enjoyed that piece of crap.
He'll like it the next time he sees it.
It'll be my favorite movie.
Yeah. So I did that. Also, in keeping with seeing Red, I stared at a lot of Netflix, which kind of has a red logo, right? No, a lot of kung fu movies. I'm trying to educate myself on proper kung fu film.
Are there lots of them on Netflix?
Yeah, why not? A lot of Jackie Chan and a lot of Bruce Lee. I don't know what else you would need.
You know where you'll find a lot of really super-duper old-school ones? Is on Hulu, because they're all, like, free ones.
Oh, okay.
Public domain. They're awful. Awesome.
Yeah, so I'm going through some kung fu, which I don't know. I kind of think kung fu movies are a forgotten thing now. Like, they had that small resurgence with Iron Monkey and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, but they're dunskies now, it seems like.
Yeah. I'm waiting for Blaxploitation to come back. I'm a big fan of those movies.
You didn't see Black Dynamite?
Oh, I did many a time, and it's awesome.
It's a fantastic movie.
I can't quote it, because it shouldn't be politically correct. But go watch it, because that's a funny-ass movie.
I'm waiting for the selection of channels to somehow be magically reduced so that I'm forced on a Sunday to watch rubber monster movies and kung fu flicks, pardon my English, all day. Because that's how I got the exposure to both genres. That was all that was on.
Absolutely, man. Every wake up early Sunday, that's all you got.
It's the best.
Samurai Sunday, get into it.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else that gets me really excited about these weeks. I'm shopping for a new Android phone now. My contract with T-Mobile is finally up. There are no good phones on T-Mobile. Shopping for phones is the worst.
Yes.
I end up going into a Radio Shack, and going into Radio Shack's kind of the worst.
Yes.
Except for the Arduinos.
Yeah, their electronic components are good, which I actually bought a few electronics components just because. But everything else, but they still sell VHS tapes there. What the fuck?
Only black ones.
Who runs this place? Who owns this place? Radio Shack, what the fuck?
That's where all the people that live here where I live go.
To the shack?
Yeah, that's why they need VHS tapes.
And they need coily phone cords.
How is that place still around? I don't get it. I legitimately don't get it. Oh, Ren Faire. Ren Faire was also this week. A lot of good times at the Ren Faire. Dressed up like a pirate. I did not drink anything this year after a bad experience at last year's Harlem Renaissance Fair, which we won't get into. Let's see, what else did I do there?
Seeing as you got kicked out last year, I'm surprised you were able to get into it this year.
Well, I was dressed up as a pirate this year, so snuck past their radar. No, saw some jousting, saw some, cannons and trebuchets. I enjoy a good Renaissance Fair, even if it's nothing at all to do with the Renaissance.
Speaking of the Renaissance Fair, are you guys interested in watching that Full Metal Jousting show that's coming on?
I already seen it, and it's pretty good.
Is it like a reality television show like America's Next Top Jouster? Or
I haven't seen it yet.
No, it's kind of like Top Shot. You know, they get guys, mostly guys who don't joust. They teach them how to joust, and then they have a competition for it, and it's pretty intense. I mean, they're muscle dudes or, wild guys, whatever. But they really freaking joust, man. And
isn't
like
jousting like somewhat dangerous?
Oh yeah, and the steel armor that these guys wear is like full body and bolted on, and they're pretty well protected. But I mean, they're riding these horses at pretty damn fast.
Breakneck speeds, Dustin Hoffman. Breakneck speeds.
And they actually, they start off with a jousting pole that's one size, and then after X number of jousts, they increase the diameter, so it's a little bit more stiffer, that kind of thing. It's neat. I watched the first episode. It was cool.
He touched my pole. I had to get a stiffer one.
Tom, what have you been up to this week?
I don't. Really
I'm not touching
know that
this
I
one. I'm not going.
Ugh. Ignoring it's easier to edit.
Yeah, rather than going on about horses and boners, more horse boners for the next 5 minutes. Also, horse boners, pretty fucking funny. All right,
only
Tom,
five?
What have you been up to recently?
Wow. Well, thanks for asking. I a lot of my updates tie in very nicely with Rick's. I was able to see the re-release, the 3D re-release of Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. And I went in knowing what I was in for and looking forward to seeing it in 3D. And I determined to enjoy myself. And lo and behold, I did enjoy myself. I enjoyed hating Jar Jar. He's just comically bad. And I knew once he showed up, the movie would take a real turn for the worse, and sure enough, it did. And everybody in the theater was like, ugh, like audibly groaning whenever you would say dumb things or do dumb things. But everybody, there was no more disappointment. We all knew what was coming. So I just sat back and enjoyed the really nice 3D presentation of the movie. And I concur with Rick that it gets me excited about the later movies that are going to have some scenes that I think will look spectacular in 3D.
Yeah, I will watch Revenge of the Sith once it hits the 3D re-release or whatever. That is a fantastic movie.
It's gonna be good. I venture to say even episode two. I think of, like, for example, when they're chasing when they're battling with Django in space in that asteroid field or whatever is gonna look cool. For example, just a number of scenes that are gonna look really good. Wow, yeah, I enjoyed it.
$8 million.
What's that?
That movie grossed $8 million in the box office.
Is that good or bad? I don't know what a good.
It's middling, but I mean $8 million. That's money. That is money in the bank, and he will make a lot more than that on the DVD sales too. So,
well, good for him. I've decided that I'm not gonna hate George Lucas or Star Wars. I'm just gonna accept it for what it is. That's the new me. That's the new leaf I turn over. It took me until February to realize what my New Year's resolution was, and that was it.
To not hate George Lucas anymore?
Yes. Especially after I read that quote from him, like, he sounded like an upset old grandpa. Like, oh, I'm not going to make any more movies if everyone hates me. Gosh. Sorry, George.
Willow 2.
Yes! Finally. Willow 2. The Peck Returns. starring Gregory Peck. All right. Anyway, apart from that, I went up to – we are, as our listeners know, located in South Florida. I went to Central Florida, the land of theme parks and family fun, where I did not go to any of those theme parks or have any family fun. I instead attended a comic/nerd stuff convention called MegaCon, which Rick mentioned. And there I saw, in addition to a lot of cool, like, Star Wars droids and builder groups and all, just cool stuff of every stripe as usual, on display, a MakerBot fabricating stuff. And I got to be a fabrication hipster and be like, yeah, one of my friends has one of those. All like a year ago. Big deal. But it was amazing to see how interesting. Like, people are like, wait, it just makes stuff? Like, you just tell it what to make and it makes it? They're like, yeah. It's like, to get back to a recent discussion of ours about replicators, it's like the closest thing we have, man. It just makes something out of nothing.
Yep.
And there it is.
Wait, was Bree Pettis there displaying it?
Sorry, don't get the reference.
That's the guy who – he's the president, CEO of MakerBot Industries, the guy who started it all. Oh. He was – to fit in with my – you know, everybody knows – well, you know, I hated Arduino. Now I love Arduino.
You hated Bree Pettis for the longest time.
I don't hate him so much anymore now that I have a 3D printer sitting in my freaking workshop.
I'm living the future,
you guys. The future. Bree Pettis gave me the future.
When you see that face with those glasses, you don't feel that little twinge of that old hatred boiling up?
Maybe if he was having, like, a latte with Eddie Vedder and...
If you saw anybody having a latte with Eddie Vedder, you would hate them, right?
Pretty much. I'd go in there swinging. Hate that guy.
Like, either this latte or Eddie Vedder are getting punched out right now. Hopefully both.
Sorry, guys, for the uneducated. Okay, this guy, I understand he's in charge of it, but why did you hate him before? What was he before this?
He did a lot of really interesting and informative podcasts and video blogs about making things. It was an irrational kind of dislike about simply the way his voice sounded.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
He was like one of the original hipsters on the internet, and I just despised the guy.
Gotcha.
But now I like him. I tolerate him. He gave me the future.
Well, Rick, you'll be happy to know that I don't know if he was there, and I'm certain that Eddie Vedder wasn't there, although his brother Darth was.
Darth Vedder? Really?
Anyway, had a great time there at the convention. And let's see, apart from that, I don't think I've done much else of note.
Skyrim? Star Wars, Old Republic?
The Skyrim. The Skyrim continues to keep me very occupied. And that's it. That sums up what I've been up to. Those two cool activities.
I got a question for you and Rick, and I'm sure the listeners have it as well. For those of us who are looking to buy Star Wars on Blu-ray, should we wait for the 3D releases, or should we just get what we got?
You should get them both.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't buy the Blu-ray DVD or Blu-ray. I wouldn't buy the Blu-ray
DVD. I wouldn't buy
DVDs
a Blu-ray DVD at all.
Because that doesn't exist. But
is the 3D worth it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you spent the extra money and have a 3D TV, so you might as well just wait and take advantage of it. But
I thought the 3D added and did not detract from the movies. It just added it's a cool feature to have. I think he didn't go for gimmickry and like make Jar Jar's tongue fling out at you or anything stupid. I just thought it made the movie better.
Cool.
Just the deep.
Here's what I'll say.
The Blu-rays it's in fun. General are shitty. Like they're edited yet again. So. That's the biggest problem with them.
Right.
That's what you do. Gotcha. Take the money you would spend on the 3D Blu-ray release of the new Star Wars movies, spend it on your family, spend it on your loved ones. You know, maybe take that money, buy a copy of Taboo, invite all your family over, and have a family game night. Something like, of actual meaning.
Like Scattergories?
Sure. Oh, that game's awesome. I love Scattergories.
Well, Scattergories, that brings us pretty abruptly to tonight's topic, which is gaming. That is not of the video variety.
Oh my God, there's such a thing?
There is. Scattergories is probably, in my opinion, an example of why such a thing shouldn't exist. But, you know, there are actually good games.
Do you all seriously not like the classic board games?
They're called board games for a reason, brother.
So is this going to mean...
Because they're made out of wood!
Is this going to be me defending the American classic God's Honest board games to a bunch of Yu-Gi-Oh! Flopping nerd bombers?
I hope not.
You all have activated my trap card. That's a Yu-Gi-Oh! Joke. Deal with it. Oh, wow. Okay, I actually kind of like
it. It's also a transgender joke, but move along.
Oh my gosh.
So we're talking about board games today, and also we're talking about just basically tabletop gaming, right?
Yeah, gaming that is not video, let's say.
Well, I have a question. What if it's a board game that has a VHS component to it? Did you all ever play any of those back in the day?
Oh, yes.
Nightmare? Did you all ever play Nightmare? This was like a VHS game. Like you put in a VHS tape, and this old
yes!
man yelled at you as you, like, answer me, you maggot! And you'd be like... It was supposed to be scary, but it was like having the rubber-faced emperor from the end of episode 3 yelling at you. It was the most wonderful thing in the world.
Didn't one of those games have that Dana chick from that show in it?
Nope.
Yeah-huh.
That was Sewer Shark on Sega CD.
I'm still trying to figure out what Dana chick you're thinking of. Only one I could come up with.
Actually, it wasn't Sewer Shark.
Night Trap.
I don't know what I'm saying.
It was Night Trap.
Dana Ghoul?
Dana, I don't know what her last name is. What you talk about will it show?
Dana Plato. Yeah, from Arnold's Happening or whatever it was called. Wow, we got back on video games. Anyway, non-video games, let's say. I actually did play, since you mentioned it, Grant, a VHS game based on Dungeons & Dragons. I still have the game, but not the tape. So if anybody has a VCR... We can't use it. We can instead find the video online and play that game together if you want. Anytime.
It's probably on YouTube, right?
Almost certainly, yeah. Yeah. With all
those games are all bad. All the VHS games are bad, as opposed to tabletop gaming, which is fantastic.
Well, let's talk about tabletop gaming. When you say tabletop gaming, Grant, by example, tell us what you mean.
Well, I think amongst you all, I have two well-documented loves, three well-documented loves in tabletop gaming. I love DMing Dungeons & Dragons. I love playing, War Machine. And I also love Magic the Gathering. Those are my three big ones. Those are the ones that I've invested large chunks of my time into. Well, time and, let's face it, money. These are not cheap hobbies.
D&D should not be an expensive hobby, but it ends up being, it seems.
I make it one. I like sculpt like sculpy monsters to fly around and attack. I'll take balsa wood and foam core and make little like multi-tiered battles and stuff. I have like fake, like these things of like $8 acrylic gel, just so I can make fake water.
Sculpey water?
No, well, like
Sculpt
like there was a haunted hot springs, of course, because all hot springs are haunted, and you have to have like clear acrylic water for that, right? Come on, this is an amateur hour.
I was exposed to D&D back in high school, and I was given the game. A friend of mine gave me the game, and it disappeared like a week later, and I had no idea where it went. Turns out my father took the game and threw it away because he believed all the rumors that people were killing each other over D&D. And he took the game away from me because he thought I would get into drugs and sword play and dungeons and stuff like that and kill myself or kill somebody else. So
sword play?
Yes.
How do you get into sword play? Like, Dad, buy me a sword. Nah, I'm not going to do anything with it.
I do not
Wait,
know.
No, you go to the guy on the street corner, he gives you a dagger or some form of saber, and eventually you just need bigger and bigger medieval weaponry to get your fix. Like, oh man,
right.
Just a mace. A mace will get me through this week.
Right, a pusher. There's like a blade pusher. Hey, kid, try this dagger. Nah, this one's free. Just come back and see me when it's not enough.
It's just a starter weapon.
Then you're getting a short sword.
In this day, you're sucking dick for pocket knives out behind the 7-Eleven. It's a bad fucking habit.
Dad, I just need this bastard sword and I'll stop, I promise. What have I done?
So your dad saved your life. That's true, because
Apparently,
Dungeons & Dragons is...
in his mind.
Yeah. I mean, I worship the devil explicitly because, well, Earthdawn and Dungeons & Dragons.
So we're not talking like, you know, Monopoly and Trouble and...
Not yet. We're going through. There's different types of games, so we'll get there.
So we've defined tabletop gaming as sort of as those sort of things that Grant... Well, at least so far as those things Grant mentioned. And I'll say on the D&D... On the topic of Dungeons and Dragons, when we played, we were like poor kids, and like miniatures and maps were, you know, just weren't even involved. We would just make the stuff up as we went. Like, you're walking down the path, and there's a cave on the left, and you know, a stream on the right, and then like a battle would happen, and then we would like, wait, where was the stream? It was on the left, and then you know, we were winging it, like whatever. It was all just walk through your imagination. But when I got older and actually started playing with miniatures and maps and like facing and tactics became more clear to me, I was like, oh wow, we really weren't playing this right.
I think there is a right way to play these games, which is probably what makes it so fun. It is ultimately about telling the story if you're doing it properly to me.
Yeah, well, and if you like. Painting figures and stuff and making terrain, then that's another joy you can derive from it.
Which, yes.
Yes!
Go ahead.
I dislike dealing with the people that play Dungeons & Dragons so much, I just want to become a kooky old dude who builds model trains. Just because that's all the stuff I like about Dungeons & Dragons without having to actually get together five adults with their disparate schedules to play Dungeons & Dragons. Like, nope, I'm gonna lock myself in my room and work on my HO scale... Thompson.
You know, it is funny. I used to love DMing as a kid. Like, it's all I almost never played. I DM'd all the time. And then I think now, oh, as an adult, boy, it would be fun to play with like mature players who aren't going to just totally derail my campaign. You just can't get people to get together, man.
It's finding four adults with 9-to-5 schedules that actually mean 9-to-5 is damn near impossible.
Right.
Any day of the week, ladies, I'm on board. I had never played, and I've sat back, I've watched it. Like, we all know, I hate dragons, I hate elves, any kind of bullshit like that. But you love
World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft got me to be acceptable of these things. And that opened my eyes to the idea of playing some D&D, and also sitting in. Tom used to play with a group of guys, and they would play online. And had like a digital map and stuff. And I just wanted to play so desperately that I actually would just sit in as a listener and partake as a bystander and overseer of their game just to feel like a part of it. Like, I could envision the story and everything so well. It was so awesome. I would love to play. I've only had one chance to ever kind of play. Me, Kimberly, my girlfriend, and another friend of ours, Brian, and Tom, we started to do Star Wars D&D.
Didn't I create a character on that too, or is this a second attempt?
Second
attempt.
I remember
we all created characters. Okay.
Yeah, so we actually started playing with those characters. And okay. I gotta say, dude, it was it only lasted a few weeks before new jobs came about and the typical, what you guys are saying, the adult derailment. But, dude, still to this day, when the thought pops into my head about where we left off in that campaign, I still have that sense of wonderment and excitement of like, oh my god, what's gonna happen? And it was left on a cliffhanger, and I have no idea what the hell was gonna happen. And until we can figure it out and get everybody back together, I may never know. And it's sad, but I had a friggin' blast, man, a blast.
Yeah, it's those things are always really fun to get together, but Dungeons and Dragons, its biggest problem is that it burns out quickly. People just. A lot of people get into it as a fad type thing, and it just disappears very rapidly. Good times, though.
And it does draw you in. I mean, let's compare Dungeons and Dragons, which is really just like an imagination, journey, to games that are no less enjoyable, but a lot easier to just pick up and put down by those. I mean, the miniature-based games like War Machine and presumably Warhammer 40K, if you have the money to invest. Wow. Somebody objects to Warhammer.
Rick spent his healthcare budget on Space Marines, so that's why he's talking so much.
I will say this. I give that game a lot of crap, but every time I see it, I want to play it. And then I have to remember back to the one time where I actually did try to play it, and I wanted to slit my wrist and throat and gouge my own eyeballs out. Because unless you have some kind of fetish-level addiction to holding dice and love numbers, this game is not fun at all.
Also, the constant arguments about whether or not someone is 50% covered, 75% covered, the difference between 51 millimeters and 52 millimeters for range of fire. Like, some of the stuff in those games and the way people get into it is frightening. Like, you have to play those games with friends where winning maybe isn't the most important thing.
Right.
Or else you'll hate everyone.
That is a key difference that you highlighted there. I mean, with D&D, let's say I'm DMing and you guys are all taking part in my campaign, I don't want to kill you. I just want to tell the story, and I want to have fun doing that, and I want you to have fun succeeding in the story. So I'll fudge a dice roll, or I'll change the scenario around so you won't get creamed. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or if there's a rules argument, if there's a rules argument, you can just say, nope, this is the way it plays out. Like, there's an arbiter. There is a controlling force.
Right. There's not like nerds with tape measures. Yeah. It's cut and dry. Even though some heated arguments do. I never really quite got like what the argument was like, no, you can't cast that spell more than twice a day. Like, all right, yeah, you cast it, whatever. I was always that kind of DM, but the competition's not there like it is with these like miniature-based competitive games.
Yeah, I don't think we got into any arguments at all when we were playing online with all those guys, right?
Oh yeah, Grant was playing that too. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I was.
That's
like,
right.
Did you forget I was there? Come on.
Yeah, I did.
No, I didn't forget. And Grant, to be fair, you and I were really obnoxious. Like, our characters would jump to these wrong conclusions all the time. Like
I was role playing. I was being the ever do gooding paladin. Like, justice was the only thing that mattered to me. Justice and righteousness. So
that's right.
Burning whorehouse, and I'm like, nope, we're gonna save the orphans.
That's right.
Along with the story, I was trying to play my character's role, and to the DM's to the DM's credit, he's like, ugh. Because he was trying to give us like the best treasure from after a quest, but it meant stealing from a train.
And he wouldn't do it.
I'm like, you're giving me better equipment for my character. I'm not taking it because it'd be stealing, and that's not what my character does. And that's where the fun stuff comes from, like blindly playing along to what your character is supposed to do.
That's kind of cool.
And my character,
I as a person.
You would take the treasure as a person, but you are supposed to play your character. That's true.
I'm not playing Grant. I'm playing Grathgar Halfhammer of the Halfhammer clan.
I would go out of my way to. I don't remember what it like. My character would always try to bluff and do stupid things, like, and would form in his head these ideas about like the nature of our enemy, of our antagonist, and would just go around like blundering, you know, through conversation like, oh, we were fighting some undead warlock who he decided who had powers of time travel. So he, in his mind, he started calling him a time lich.
And or the Electro Count. Remember the Electro Count?
There was another adventure we were on with another group where we named the guy the Electro Count because he used electric magic or something like that.
No, he was a good guy, but he was called the Lector Count, which was a high position. But because all these bad guys were using electricity, we started calling this guy the Electro Count and act like he was
right.
The villain, even though he didn't do anything.
The Electro Count.
I remember when I...
Under his skin.
I remember
they roll with it. Sorry,
I couldn't hear what you said. You pulled a trench run.
I think he said, "I'm going to eat this man's skin." I think he was thinking of the Hannibal Lecter count.
Oh, nice.
No, it's like, were you guys making fun of him, or was it something he was rolling with? That kind of thing.
Oh, it was another fun loving group. You have to know what your DM what they'll accept, but more often than not, I'll like to play a character who is. Well-meaning and well-intentioned, but doesn't quite always end up doing the right thing because he's maybe a little bit too naive or dumb.
I remember when I was sitting in on one of the days you guys were playing, and I can't remember if it was Grant or Tom, but one of you guys was really living it up playing the character, and you were stuck on a hot air balloon above the train that everybody else was on, and you couldn't get off the balloon to help everybody else. So,
right.
And it was because you wouldn't make a decision that your character wouldn't, you know, basically just living the character and not doing what would is everyone else was like, come on, just make the damn decision and get down here and help us. I can't, my character would never make that decision.
Well, was that was probably the train robbery, which would have been,
yeah.
My character did not want to be part of all that.
Yes, it was the train robbery because there was also whores on that train and everyone's going in. And
oh, they were trying to bribe a hooker to distract the girl.
We hired prostitutes to help us
yes.
do the caper.
Yes.
And the DM was like, you all want to do what? Like, no, here's this magic powder that puts people to sleep. And you're like, nope, hookers.
That's right. And we used the hooker to, like, seduce the guards or something.
Yes.
And Grant's character didn't want any part of it.
It was nonsense. I wanted to just take that one book that we were supposed to steal from the Time Lick.
But there was treasure on the train, right, that we wanted.
Yes, there was treasure, yes.
That was so funny to sit and be like a fly on the wall for that whole thing. And I mean, dude, nothing made me want to play more than that. Like, I wanted to play before that, and then after that, I was just like, dude, I gotta do this. I gotta do this. It was awesome.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, role-playing games like that, pen and paper role-playing games, it's just such a wide... It's as fun as video games are, you really can't quite duplicate just the complete random, you know, nature of a pen and paper RPG where even if the DM carefully crafts out a story, if he's flexible or she's flexible and you go off the rails with the story, they just fill it in. Okay, well, then now this happens, that happens, etc. So yeah, I understand the appeal, Rick. And now just talking about it, recounting the past adventures, I'm wanting to play, as always happens when I discuss this kind of thing. But putting that aside for a moment,
I need to slow this roll down because I just want to stop and play Dungeons and Dragons now.
I know, me too. In terms of fitting into the busy lifestyle of an adult, though, guys, would you say that miniature-based gaming, you know, combat gaming? Such as War Machine or Warhammer.
It fits in better.
It fits in better, yeah, because it's like a discrete. You're sitting down, you're having a battle, you're done. Maybe you're doing a tournament, you're done. You know, it doesn't really fit into a...
But it's like 3 hours to play, maybe an hour or so of setup and, like, bullshitting before and after, and you're done. Like, there's no getting five people together. There's no, oh, Johnny has to work or he has to go to his girlfriend's, sister's... brother-in-law's bar mitzvah or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and most of the time you can just show up with your with your figures in tow, and there's going to be somebody at the comic shop or game shop ready, willing, and able to play. You know what I mean? And that was always one of the cool draws about it was that you could just go in and watch people play, even. I mean, I have a full War Machine army and still have yet to play a game out in public, but would be every Friday night at the comic shop hovering over everybody else's tables watching everybody else play.
Yeah, watching me get my ass beat because you were too afraid to play yourself. I had some good victories with my army too. I do like the miniature wargaming stuff. I enjoyed coming up with like army color schemes and painting them. But I mean, if you want to take it even to a more easy to pick up and play, less investment for the adult who maybe doesn't have all the time in the world, card gaming is the kind of the nerdy strategic game of choice, I would say. Magic the Gathering. Magic the Gathering was one of my favorite things growing up, and I still, if anybody wanted to play, I still have like a couple decks built. I'm like, I'm ready. Let's do this.
I play on PlayStation. I mean, I play on Xbox.
Yeah, it's close. That's kind of close, but it's not the real thing.
It's cheaper.
No, but yes, it is definitely cheaper.
$10 and I got all the cards.
Well, no, that's an interesting thought. Do games translate well to a console? Like here we are talking about playing, you know, non-video games to not play video games, and we come full circle right back to you can play Settlers of Catan, you can play Magic, you can play these different video game adaptations of these non-video games. Did they lose or gain something?
I could not imagine wanting to play Settlers of Catan on a console with people I couldn't see. I think you lose so much of what makes it I believe, Rick, you love it on the console.
I love it on the console, partially because of how freaking shy I am and weird around being around people, but also because it was like I tried playing it in real life, and for some reason, I don't know, man, it was just the game. It seemed like everyone else was having fun, and I was just overlooking. I was like, I just don't get it. But when I played it on my own, at my own pace, and maybe it was just because the pressure of learning, like, maybe I would enjoy it more going out and playing it, you know, live now, now that I know how to play and I'm comfortable with what's going on, which I would actually really be interested in investigating that, because I have a blast playing that game online.
Yeah, it's seriously, there's very little better than just getting a six-pack of beer, inviting some people over, and playing a good game of Catan.
But I can say this, like, Kimberly has it as well, and she'll play in the bedroom, I'll play in the living room, but we'll play online together. And
sounds familiar.
And, you know, there is something about that. I mean, you can talk over chat and stuff, but it's different when you're playing with people that you know, people that you're comfortable with, and being able to just get into that, like, retarded game state of mind where you're just over the top goofy and having a blast with it and being really vocal. So, you know, I think for me, as much as I love to play them on the consoles and stuff, it's the less pressure learning the stuff, and I can pick it up and play it whenever I want. I don't have to worry about trying to find friends to make time. So,
I think you've drawn probably the best distinction between tabletop gaming and console gaming. Console gaming is really about, yo, dog, I'm going to go play a game.
Right.
That is ultimately what console gaming is. In a lot of cases, things like Dungeons & Dragons, Magic the Gathering, War Machine, all those things for us, every time we played them, is largely an excuse to get people together.
Right, in one social location, event.
Yeah, it's very much like, we're going to have a social event, but we need like some form of trappings around it that act as social lubricant. Like just the amount of jokes and banter that go on when you play a game of Settlers of Catan, it makes it worth it. Like the game's almost secondary. Yeah, it feels good to win, but it's more about all the dumb boner jokes that come up when you play Settlers of Catan.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm kind of not into that scene like Rick said. You know, it's like getting together with people, sitting down, talking, yuck. But my sister and brother-in-law, they're heavy into games, and they both introduced me to that game at a family reunion. And so me, my brother, and them two got together, and we were playing it. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of – I mean, it's cool because it's a, you know, a strategy game. So when you're sitting there with the people, you know, you make fun. You know, it is really more of a social thing, which I usually don't get into. But with the game there, it made it easier, and it was a hell of a lot of fun too. And like we were done playing, and I'm like, let's play again.
but we had to eat dinner.
Boo. Nutrition. But,
another game that they introduced me to was, what the heck was it? Roll Through the Ages? Have you guys played that?
Haven't played.
I'm familiar.
It's a dice game, a strategy game where you have to get resources. There's a couple ways of winning, like same thing like with Catan. But it was a fun game, too. I mean, you just roll dice and you try to get resources, distribute your resources properly. And, yeah, it's just a hell of a lot of fun. But it does, it's one of those, you know, get out, talk to people, that sort of thing, you know, rather than sitting at home on your computer, which, you know, I like a lot. But if I ever want to talk to people, the game is a great entryway into that.
Do you see yourself anytime in the next 10 to 15 years wanting to speak to anybody, Keith?
Wanting to? No, I might have to, you know. But do they play those? I mean, I've been placed with you guys, you know, where they play Warhammer and stuff. Do they, you know, have board game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Board games there and that kind of stuff at these places?
Yeah, they even have board game night. You can just show up and grab a game, throw it on a table and play. No charge.
Tom and I used to have large amounts of pickup Catan games a couple years ago. Maybe it was just constant pickup Catan.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I've gone to some of the local comic book stores and just played pickup games of Super Dungeon Explorer. So yeah, I mean it does happen. Normally, if there's like a few people sitting around not doing anything, and there's board games around, you can say, "Yo, dogs, how about some Taboo?" It'll happen. Fucking love Taboo.
What exactly is Taboo?
It's a traditional American board game.
I mean, like what are you doing it?
He's not allowed to talk about it, bro. It's taboo.
Pretty much, there's like a word. There'll be a word, like, let's say the word is Al Gore. You'll have to get your teammates to guess the word Al Gore, but there'll be certain things you can't say, like you can't say president or vice president or Bill Clinton.
Let me sum it up for you in one quote from one of my favorite movies of all time. That we were just talking about earlier. The password is nipple.
What the fuck is that from? I don't remember that in Star Wars.
Cable guy.
Oh.
Nipple. Okay, so it's like, you know, the drawing games except for it's words and yapping.
Yeah, pretty much. It's you have to paint with your words.
So how do you guys feel about the video? Like, Grant, have you've played, I'm assuming you've played the digital versions of Catan and
I've played
like that.
Digital version of numerous board games like Magic the Gathering, Catan, Monopoly, things like that. There's only one notable exception I can think of. If you're playing with good people, Words with Friends is a fun game.
Uh-huh.
For the most part, I always find digital versions of board games to lack the essence of what actually makes a board game fun.
What about everybody else? What's your opinion on that? Because I think I have an exception that I'll bring after I hear everyone's answers.
I have to agree with Grant. As much as I despise social gatherings, I don't think I would enjoy those games that much playing them online. I actually had one for my PSP. That I thought was an action game, and it turned out to be a turn-based card game, and I completely hated it.
What about you, Tom?
I guess if you if your desire was simply to interact with people, and the game had, of course, the chat facility, you know, and where you could be like, "Oh, good move, bro," or something like that.
Yeah, that's a must.
You'd still have that. But you know, board games really do lend themselves to interacting with someone live, so. I'm not going to say I wouldn't play something like Catan on the Xbox, but I'd definitely rather play it in person. And certainly that goes for games like, for obvious reasons, you know, games like Pictionary or, you know, Word or your drawing games, things like that, you wouldn't be able to execute necessarily on a console. Would, even if there were some way to do it, you'd lose that fun, you know, all the getting jazzed up trying to guess whatever the person's drawing or saying.
All right, now what about games that are more like, because most of the games everyone's been talking about are group games, but what about like a one-on-one style game, like Battleship?
I'd play that online.
Battleship's just the worst anyway.
What?
Wow, that's
Battleship's the worst. It's like Connect the Go Dog. You want to play Connect 4?
Battleship is the worst. Like Star Wars isn't good, and Close Encounters has fake looking ships.
Okay, I don't get.
I'm just catching up.
I don't get how Battleship is a good game. I literally don't.
Oh, Grant,
it's going to be an awesome movie.
Well, Liam Neeson's in it. You know what? Here's the deal. If somebody actually says, "You sunk my battleship," I'm in.
Oh, you know they're going to say that.
Yeah, somebody's going to have to say that, right?
Wait a minute. They're making a battleship movie?
Dude, you haven't seen the previews?
No.
How have you missed this?
It's got to be awful.
It's about aliens attacking. No, they're making a battleship movie. And you know what the best thing is? They're making a video game based on the battleship movie.
Is Mr. Potato Head the captain of the submarine?
You have to watch this. It looks like a Transformers, like a Michael Bay Transformers movie.
It's not based on the game, dude.
It
will say based on the best-selling game.
It's a Hasbro movie.
It's a Hasbro of a movie.
I wish words cannot describe how not joking Keith and I are about this. Like, this is...
How are they going to shoehorn the battleship mechanic in? Like, our radar's down, we've got no visual, we're just going to have to plug away at this board.
We're like aliens attacking in Squadron B-4.
The aircraft carrier is unresponsive. My God, they've sunk my battleship.
Wow.
They hit the ship that's 2x1 in the first attack. Lucky bastards.
Now, getting back to what you were saying, Rick, I'll say, like, with Battleship, yeah, I can play it online, but I would want to talk to the person because...
Hey, you don't have to play against somebody. You can play against a computer on that game.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess it's fun, but it would get boring, I think, after a while.
Really?
Unlike Tetris.
These alien bastards.
So my argument is moot.
Thank you. I don't know, man. I love Battleship. I have Battleship on pretty much every iteration of my Game Boy. Like, that's a dead legger for sure. That thing will suck me into the bathroom like a time vortex, man.
It's true. It's true. Once Rick bought a sheet of graph paper and almost starved to death. You're just filling them in all day.
So just to be clear, in the Battleship movie, Liam Neeson's going to find out. Like, the way to defeat the aliens' targeting system is to turn your ship, because once they hit your ship, they'll go north, south,
they
east,
won't know
west,
what to do.
And they'll keep firing, but if you turn, like, diagonally, they'll miss you.
No, so, actually, I'm going to go ahead and spoil the ending, the script leaked last week. He's going to convince the aliens to go grab him a soda out of the fridge, and he's going to go peek over the screen.
You cheated. See, that's why Battleship with people is fun. Cheating. There's cheating.
No. I got into a fight with my first high school sweetheart over Battleship. Because there was a really, it was like if you sunk an enemy ship, it would squirt you with water in the face, right? It was like that weird version.
Oh yeah, I know that version.
And if you poked in the little targeting thing that would tell it where you shot just a little bit, it would give you pressure if there was an enemy ship. You could cheat while sitting there the whole time. You could easily cheat by just poking the thing in halfway. And after I just totally cleaned her clock at this game, I didn't miss a shot. The argument was, if you're willing to cheat at Battleship, how do I know you won't cheat on me? I was honest to God, dead. Like, as serious as I am that they're making a Battleship movie, I am serious that that conversation occurred.
Oh my God.
So, yes, Battleship ruined my high school relationship, which, well, let's face it, was probably pretty dead anyway.
That's awesome.
Okay, so it's pretty much a split decision.
You know what? Actually, I came up with a situation where I find digital computerized versions of board games to be very helpful. I played a lot of battle chess growing up, and things like chess or Go, where large amounts of instruction are needed to get good at them. Playing against a computer can actually be a pretty good learning tool, as far as, like, if you can find the right computer skill level and learn from your mistakes.
Can you just watch the anime to learn Go?
Yeah, you can also watch the anime. It also teaches you how to style your hair and how to yell the word for what in Japanese.
Nani?
Nani? A lot of that.
So... Yeah, so, okay, so I concur. We have a split decision on, or a kind of it depends answer on the digital version versus live version of certain games, right?
That's acceptable.
If I can bring it back to the, like, and we all, I think we all agree, like, that Dungeons & Dragons has the ability to be, like, a very, like, possibly the most rich gaming experience if you can get people to organize and play. Speaking from my experience as a DM, especially when I was a kid, the DM, there is a ton of prep work that goes in, a ton of, you know, and just it's a big time investment on the DM's part, and he's got a lot to, or she, I don't want to be sexist, has a lot to lose if no one showed up because everything was for naught. So what I would propose, if you want a really professional gaming experience and a DM that's very committed to his / her / its craft, you should compensate the DM / GM, whatever you want to call it, in some way. Don't you agree that that would be a good idea, guys?
Players always bring snacks or food.
No,
and
man.
Don't be the guy who brings a 2-liter to the Dungeons & Dragons thing and says, no, this is just for me.
Oh, that's so lame.
Oh, those guys are the worst.
So let's take that thought to an absurd extreme and say that there was a gaming house that someone ran, and for everybody throwing in a little beer money every week, you could have a very professionally orchestrated and run campaign, and you would have your appointment on XYZ date with a certain DM or game master or dungeon master who would run that campaign for you. And that's like sort of one of the services this store offered, let's say, this game shop. Could you see people paying a nominal fee for that?
Talking about like a sex dungeon, but instead of sex, it's Dungeons & Dragons dungeon.
Right. You go into a sex dungeon that's closed down. You reopen it. You clean out all of the fun stuff and put in nerdy stuff. And
you have a professional like DM that's on staff there that will.
Yeah, like, well, what if there were staff members that got paid, you know, either through small contributions by the players or because that's what the person was paid for to run campaigns? Would that make things better? You know, now the DM does, that is the DM's time. You don't have to worry about the DM finding time in his or her.
You know
day.
What? If you run this in the same model as like gyms and personal trainers, where God damn it, I signed this 3-month contract with a DM, I'm going to go. You might actually get people to finish a campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, and you know, and like, that's the DM's job. So you're getting calls like, I hope you show up for tonight's campaign. I've got some really nice adventures cooked up for you. Like, while you're at work, like, I got to make it now. So I'll go to Susie's soccer practice next week.
Now, what about quality here? I mean, what if he's just pumping out crap?
Yeah, that's the difference.
Then he gets fired. You're expecting a pro experience, a well-thought-out campaign, and you're expecting a guy that gets you, that can walk you through, guy or gal. I'm so working on
just
that.
Just go with just the guy thing, and everyone will know that it's just.
I'm just trying to be ultra PC because I part of my mission here is breaking the stereotype that only boys play D&D, even though that's the truth.
I was going to say, how many girls have you played with?
Yeah, in my lifetime, like none.
There were 4 in my last group.
But you wear a bow tie, that's different.
Yeah, you wear a bow tie and a fez. Anyway, my point being, you would get a very pro experience, and I think if the person sucked, they would lose their job. If that was the question.
I think, let's say it was us four, I wouldn't pay you shit because we're friends and you're enjoying it and that. But yeah, if it was like a service, absolutely. I think that it would be worth it because you're going to be getting a quality gaming experience. You got somebody who's putting in all this work to put it together, you know? I think I would definitely pay it. I do that as it is with other endeavors I have. So yeah, I think it would be cool.
Hey,
yeah,
if I had the ability to pay Tom to not stop our Star Wars campaign, I would pay him, and I'd still be paying him. But yeah, to all joking aside, I think it would be a good idea because we could get the four of us. And nobody has to take the daunting task of being the DM. We could all just show up, even if it was only for like, okay, you know, we're going to go in, we talk to this guy, and we can only do every other week. So we just want to do like one-off campaigns. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't even continue. We'll right. Just go in. It's a quick shot adventure. Or, oh, well, now so-and-so, you know, so-and-so bailed. We got somebody else. Now we want to go. We want to be here every Wednesday. 7 to 11, and Just take us on the journey, mister.
And
everybody chips in to pay. That would be awesome.
Yeah, let's say it's a nominal, I don't know, whatever, a nominal, like less than what you'd pay for an MMORPG for a month. And the guy, the guy works at the store and has a bunch of groups and is running campaigns like every night. I mean, he's making some decent...
Like a personal trainer.
Basically, yeah.
At a gym.
It's some decent side money or even a job if you got enough clients, and then these people are enjoying it, and D&D's not a joke anymore. It's like a professional deal, man.
I'd do it.
I would too. It's an intriguing idea. I think we should get that going. Let's find a sex dungeon, and let's get one of us on payroll running D&D campaigns for people.
I haven't heard what Grant thinks of it.
I think adults don't have enough time to adequately commit to Dungeons & Dragons. The adults that are capable of doing that are already playing Dungeons & Dragons within their own groups.
Right, but that's the thing.
Because they're the neckbeards capable of it.
Right, but that's just what Tom's saying is the comic book store is, you know, is providing this service. Much like a gym lets a personal trainer go in there and says, you're here lifting weights anyway, dumbbell. Why don't you help this guy out? I don't know if that's how it works. I've never been to a freaking gym, but you know what I'm saying.
It's like that, but they heavily pressure you into it, and they give you a little sample of it for free. And
come on, just pick up the tip of it.
It won't hurt.
Well, I think it would, in the busy lives of adult players, and let's just say it would extend beyond D&D, maybe you want to do board game night every week and like, hey, we're interested in playing this game, that game. It's that person's responsibility to learn the rules and walk you through the game, so that if you want a gaming night at once a week, where you don't have to sit down and worry about setup and tear down, and it's all ready to go. When you walk in, you just start playing and like you sit down. Okay, this is where we left off last time. Let's go. They could provide that. And in today's hectic world of adulthood, maybe that would make gaming a little more palatable for people that don't have time.
So how does this differ from, like, when we're playing War Machine, to have, like, the press ganger guy come and does, like, a demo or, you know, refs a tournament or whatever? Do you know what I'm saying?
I think scheduling would be a little more formalized. Right. Like, Wednesday night would be your group's night with him, so you don't have to worry about him, like, at five different tables. It would be more organized.
I don't think it's too difficult to play these games. That's the issue in these scenarios. It's too difficult for us to all coordinate our schedules to do this. That's difficult.
But if you've plunked money down, like Rick said, or was it Keith, whichever one you said that I've paid, or no, Grant, you're the one that said it. If I've already plunked money down on a contract,
that was me being cynical. I don't think that's a business model. I think that was a goof, a gag.
Yeah, I'm just saying there might be a sense of accountability. Like, I paid for this, but everybody's depending on me to show up. I might as well show up and play my stupid game.
Like, I spent $50 this month. God damn it, I'm going to have fun. Sorry, honey, the bar mitzvah.
This ties into the fact that, I can't play because, A, I don't know anybody that plays, and I have social fears that disable me to be able to just walk in and be like, hi, I want to join your D&D. Like, I don't know how to play. And I'm sitting around with all these other people who do know how to play, and I feel like a retard and an idiot, like, oh, I'm just fucking up everybody's game here. So, you know, I don't know. So that's stopping me. I don't know anybody who has the time. Like, dude, everybody I talk to, oh, I'd love to play. But dude, who's going to DM? That's always the question. If there was an electronic DM online, I'd be playing right now instead of talking to you guys.
Wizards of the Coast normally does run a at the local big comic book store, they would run every Wednesday night or so, start every month with a new really short Dungeons & Dragons campaign. Like, they put, like, Wizards of the Coast puts out the material, stores run them, they give you pre-made characters, and they teach you the rules as you go. It's like a really light and easy way for them to get you into it.
Yeah. But then, you know, with something like that, if I had a group of four or five other, like, pretty much noobs that were going to go in and dominate that space with me, that would be awesome. But the fact, you know, there's still the social anxiety angle tied into that, where if it's just me and another person, it's like, eh. And any of my friends that would be willing to go, already know how to play, so it's a waste of time for them. So I'm just trying to back up. Like, I think Tom's idea, it would be completely unfeasible for some, but completely a lifesaver for others. I don't know if lifesaver's the word, but you know what I mean.
Well, somebody whose sort of professional responsibility it was to get a new player into the game and up to speed, I think would have more commitment.
Yeah.
That's incentive. If he's getting, you know, a little bit of a kickback, it's incentive for him to get new players in and have, you know, starter classes, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Right. And as word of mouth spreads about his excellence, people want to play with him.
So it kind of propagates itself. He gets more players. He makes more money. More people learn. More people keep coming back and playing, you know, or at least, you know, trying it out, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And he gets more, you know, more wax to mold his neck beard into, you know, an impressive shape. And next thing you know, he looks like the wizard of his dreams in a big cloak with a long molded beard.
And just, I mean, from my inexperience, even, it's clearly obvious that it's all about the DM, because of the fact that I've, you know, fly on the wall at a bunch of different games at a bunch of different stores, and some of them, 5 minutes in, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I didn't get dragged into this dreck. And then other ones, I'm like, dear Lord, please let me play. Please let me play. Just depending on, you know, who's controlling it and what's going on. So have your group of guys you can pick from, you know, maybe they give you your first campaign as a freebie just to feel them out, you know?
Well, that'd be how it would work. Yeah. Yeah.
And they're all so rep driven anyway. They'd be like, oh yeah, dude, I got fucking 17 on my schedule this week. How many you got? You suck. I'm the best DM there ever was. Huzzah.
Mom's letting me live upstairs now, 'cause I'm bringing in so much money. anyway, just a thought. I thought it'd be an interesting thing to consider, whether a compensated GM might deliver a better experience, and whether players might benefit from that. But apart from that, I mean, I want to point out that I'm not being compensated for doing my outstanding job as a host. And maybe if I was, I'd go longer on this podcast. But as it stands, I'm doing this crap pro boner. So I think I've rolled up a one on my saving throw against willingness to quit. I hope we've enjoyed this conversation about non-video gaming, which somehow got back to gaming.
Video You've gaming. Activated my trap card. When you win the podcast, I get to talk about how people should go to iTunes, open it up in their little iTunes, find the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, rate it 5 stars, leave us a good comment, follow us. It makes we are a game where the primary score is in your love for us. That's it, and we want to get the high score, even though we're the only people playing. We want to win, and you all can make us feel like winners.
And if you don't like the iTunes and you want to still show us some love and give us a high score, jump on over to www.nerdstravaganza.com, where you can listen to the show, subscribe to the show, download it, stream it, email us, all kinds of good stuff.
That was the worst Akbar impression ever.